The Money Show.
Other people's money.
It's 19:37. If you've been waiting for it, well, I hope the shoe fits. If not, just try the other shoe. And if that doesn't fit, then try Batu Shoes. Why not? Theo Baloyi, the founder of Batu Shoes, is our other people's money guest this evening. The entrepreneur and founder of Batu Shoes joins us then as we take a walk through the journey of how he got to where he is. Theo Baloyi, you've become a household name. Good evening to you. Thank you so much for the time. But it wasn't all just easy pickings, right? I mean, this was a long, hard slog for you.
Yeah, good evening, and thank you for the invitation. You know, it's been a great journey, you know, filled with great milestones, you know, and obviously, you know, the people have supported us over the years, and I'm truly humbled by, you know, what we've built and how we've contributed to, you know, our communities or the communities that we trade in.
Yeah, and you went on to study accounting. I went and did the same. Yeah. And you see, great people do accounting and move on to other parts of the world. I'm just hinting in many instances. But what is it that you kind of took from those lessons? I mean, you know, you having been raised in Park and Hammanskraal, later then moving to Alex, doing your studies in accounting and changing the journey all along the way to find what actually fits for you. Excuse the pun.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and what fits is the shoe, you know, and which is the core of my business. But I think it's been a very, very, very great journey. And what really, I think, inspired me or got me to study accounting was that, you know, contrary to the popular and I think belief, was that accounting is a very hard subject to pursue. You know, it's very technical. It's very boring. You know, there's like sort of negative connotation as to, you know, what accountants do. And I found it very interesting, you know, as I was starting accounting from high school. So, and in my community that I come from, you know, Parque, which is in the rurals, like about 50 k's outside Hammanskraal, you know, I haven't had anyone who has studied or know anyone who has studied accounting. So I wanted to be that first guy that really, you know, pursues a profession in accounting and really learn a lot. And that journey has been very beautiful because I learned a lot about, you know, the business, you know, through my journey with PwC because I was in advisory. I did a lot of work in different, I think, industries. You know, I got exposed in different scope of work. And that sort of exposed me, you know, to what I do now and exposed me to, you know, business, you know, which is something that I do now, you know. And it's been a great journey since then.
Yeah, that certainly just sounds like it's always been, you know, something that has sort of come naturally, though, for the most part. Would you say that that's the case? I mean, having started this journey, do you say to yourself, yep, this is where I could go with this. This is where I actually want to do. And sort of envision yourself saying, yeah, I could actually be the entrepreneur I want to be.
For sure, because even when I was studying my, you know, Become Accounting Sciences, second year in Become Accounting Sciences, you know, I used to sell perfumes door to door in Alex. You know, I was that guy who would really, you know, hustle everyone in the township, try to sell them a cologne or two, you know, and I think that's where the entrepreneurial bug, you know, has bitten me. So I've always been that student in accounting that does not, I did not limit myself to the studies and the field of study that I was in, which was accounting. I always explored, you know, other avenues of making money and really being able to learn along the journey, you know. And I think the entrepreneurial bug beat me then, you know, because I would go for a text class or editing class, then later on grab my bag, be on the street and sell, you know. So I've always, you know, I think had that entrepreneurial bug in me.
What is it about creating the kind of partnerships you've made when you've stuck out the business? Now you've said to yourself, this is actually what I want to do. And obviously trying to make it a success means you kind of have to get it known. And one of the ways you've really done that quite successfully is really through partnerships. What is it about the kind of partnerships you've chosen to team up with Batu that have really stuck out for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously, you know, we are in the business of selling shoes and we eventually want to be that leading shoe brand in Africa and, you know, dominate, you know, the market and lead, you know, the footwear industry in Africa. But I think to the core of our business lies, you know, a very strong purpose, which is, you know, reigniting hope for our people and creating sustainable jobs. So I always look for those, you know, I think common values in the companies that I collaborate with to say, how are we being of service to the communities that we trade in? You know, how are we creating impact impact in the communities that we trade in. So I don't just go for partnerships and collaboration, you know, just for profit making and capitalizing, obviously, or maximizing market share. But it's always about how are we being of service, you know, to the communities that we trade in. So I always try to look for those similar values, you know, and core values in the collabs that I get into, you know, to sort of go back to the community and create real impact.
And to try and continue to sort of raise the bar from here, how do you take that on? I mean, you've now certainly set yourself up for a stellar sort of time when it comes to Batu sneakers right now on Batu. But where would you say is the ample opportunity, the point where you can actually take in what you've done so far and grow it and make it even bigger?
I think that's what makes the journey exciting. The fact that when I started, you know, I did not have a blueprint. I did not look at anyone's, you know, value chain or business model and say, I want to replicate it and do better. You know, I learn as I go, I build as I go, and I build to, you know, the core values of our business and the core mission, you know. So we wanted to build a shoe brand that Africans can proudly affiliate with. And from how we basically build our value chain end to end, from how we do our means of production to how our supply chain works together with our retail, you know, our model, and how we do reverse logistics, and how we really, you know, capture the audience and the client and make sure that they return to our business. It was never something that was replicated, you know. So even growing the business and taking it to the next phase, it's, you know, we're literally building our blueprint. And the best way to do it, what we discovered, is that in the next, you know, 10 years or so, we want to start, we're already in Cedar region, but we want to go now to East and West Africa. And that's where we're going. I mean, just this year, talking about Africa, we were on top 100 most admired African brands, you know, ranking number 10 on that list amongst African brands that have been in business for over centuries, you know, on a brand study that was conducted by Brand Africa, you know, over 28 African countries that constitutes of 80% of African consumers. And there's this brand that started in a room in Alex. It's ranking number 10 alongside giants like Aliko Dangote Group, alongside MTN Group and Safari.com and ShopRite, you know, and we're sitting comfortably number 10. And I think that's where we're going, you know, just to dominate Africa and really make sure that our brand equity and our brand promise, you know, is very strong. And we've got that presence, you know, either online or brick and mortar. And we just have that strong African presence. And that's where we want to go in the next coming 10 years.
Yeah. Do you ever fear that you could get to a sense of just sort of relaxing and thinking to yourself, well, we've done a lot, where, you know, you kind of really expect things to just sort of happen now because you've gotten so far? I mean, you know, do you get that sense within you?
Not really. And I think because my ethos is that I don't spend time in a trophy room. You know what I mean? I appreciate the trophy room, but that's not where I spend most of my time. Okay. I spend most of my time, obviously, I've got an incredible team that I work with that always, you know, make sure that we punch above the weight and we always excel in everything else that we do. And we always, you know, execute, you know, project of purpose, projects of impact, you know. And I think the fact that, you know, there is actually people that we can actually help along the journey and walk the journey with, and millions of, you know, Africans that we can take along on this journey, just keeps me going, you know, and building. And I look at the impact that we've managed to create in our communities with our business, from, you know, the people aspect of it, or human capital aspect of it, and how people are just growing and really growing their personal lives and the things that they achieve. It just almost sort of, you know, keeps me going to say we can do more.
Sure. Theo, we're going to talk about the money aspects now, the other more interesting elements, in just a moment. I mean, this journey in itself is absolutely huge, absolutely inspirational too. We're going to just talk about your money journey as well, and the other parts of your world that perhaps make things a little bit difficult or different, and how you grew up with money, how you saw money growing up, and what it is that inspired you most. We'll have that conversation right after this. Join us.
The Money Show.
Other people's money.
We still have Theo Baloyi on the line then, joining us for our Other People's Money feature this evening, the founder of Batu Shoes. Then, Theo, we're going to talk now about just how from here money has really changed everything for you. And I speak about the earliest memories of money, right? And what it is that actually shaped it. What did you even think of money when you saw it as a young boy? Did you think to yourself, oh, it's just a means to an end? Or was there perhaps an aim to say, this is how I can take a step forward?
You know, I think for me it was more of growing up. You know, it was a means to end type of thing. You know, it was just something that every other kid would love to have, but we never knew how to, I think, use it until, you know, when I was grown up now and I was in first year, and my dad taught me, my late dad taught me a lesson that I'll never forget, and I still use even today. You know, when he told me that never have an emotional relationship with money, rather have an intellectual relationship with money, because when you have an emotional relationship with money, is that when you lose 10 rand, you would sort of lament on the loss, would cry over the loss. But when you've got an intellectual relationship with money, you know, if you lose 10 rand, you would think about how do you make the next 20 rand. And I think ever since that lesson, I've looked at money differently.
Yeah, and it's the continued elevation of understanding that, okay, this is where it started. I need to continue to take that conversation further, right? And I'll change my attitude towards money, grow, and then kind of change your behavior towards it too, right? When you receive it, you know, do you feel that that has changed over time? You've gotten a little bit of it now, and now you can start looking at it entirely different to what it was back then?
Yeah, for sure. You know, now I really, really appreciate, you know, money, because the way I look at it, it's money is a resource, you know, and depending on how you utilize the resource and where you put the resource, you know, it can really determine a lot, you know, in terms of the quality of your life, or you can even be in business, you know, as to the way you use the resource, you know. So I always appreciate every cent and try to look at it as a resource. So it's always about how do I actually take this resource and make sure that I actually maximize it, you know, to the best of, you know, my ability.
At what age did you then first get sort of your first sort of bank account then, and start thinking to yourself, I need to start saving, I need to start looking to invest, or even just keep money for those rainy days?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember when I was in first year, I just, you know, moved to Johannesburg to further my studies in accounting. And one of the things that I think was very important to have was a bank account. And obviously a lot of banks at the time was, with one of the top four banks, and they offered me a student account, you know, type of thing that had a lot of benefits. You know, and one of the benefits was obviously if you can start saving, even though I didn't save, I was not saving for anything specific, you know, but just having those savings on the side, you know, and trying to obviously leverage off the benefits that, you know, the bank was giving me, you know, and try to, I think that's when the my behavior with money really started, because before then I didn't have a bank account when I was in high school. So I would literally, you know, I consume it on cash, and then obviously just, you know, keep it in cash and just use it as just do cash transactions. But when I started having a bank account, it sort of some way, you know, shaped my behavior, you know, and my consumer behavior, if I put it like that.
Yeah. What would you say was the sort of the biggest or the most prized thing you bought, you know, sort of in the early days when you had that money in your account, or you had that money in your hands, you just thought to yourself, man, if I could just get that one item, what was that one item?
Yeah. It's so funny. And I often look at in as sort of an investment, but I bought a pair of sneakers, you know, and I say investment because I'm a sneaker business now, you know. So so I took from my perfume business, you know, and the returns from them, took some of it and bought a nice pair of sneakers, which I don't regret, because then I was introduced to the sneaker world, you know, the sneaker technology, and yeah, and so forth. But I would say it's a pair of sneakers that at the time I couldn't afford, and it hit me hard in terms of my budget and, you know, the money that I've got at the time that I
how much was it? Come on, you're allowed to tell us. You're allowed to tell us how much was it?
I think it was about 2,800, and then you can think back then as a student, you know, you would easily 2,000 rand, you know, could you can survive with it for a month, you know. So imagine taking 2,800,
yeah,
you know, and spending it on a pair of sneakers, and you probably need about 2,000, if not 2,500, to survive, you know, in a month. You know what I mean?
Whew, okay.
So it was way too expensive. It was very expensive. Yeah.
Do you feel the pressure of not buying other sneaker brands because you have a sneaker business, in the sense that you can't wear anything else? Do you feel that pressure, yeah. or is it okay to just wear other stuff just because I have my own doesn't mean I don't wear anything else?
Not entirely. I don't feel the pressure because I'm very much loyal to Batu. But to be honest with you, I do see other sneakers that are, you know, very dope and very nice. I'm like, wow, that's a nice pair. You know what I mean? You know, but because my heart is rooted in Batu, and I think I've been wearing Batu for the last 5 years, I haven't really put on any other brand beside Batu in the last 5 years. So it's sort of, I'm used to it, you know? So I don't really have any regrets.
Okay. Outside of sneakers, let's leave sneakers alone for a second. Your biggest extravagance.
Yep.
There must be that one thing that you, outside of sneakers, that you spend a lot of money on, and you're just like, I shouldn't be doing this, but you know what? Fine, I really like it, and this is what I'm gonna do.
I think it's traveling. And traveling could mean from, you know, means of travel or accommodation or what I buy when I'm traveling. And I do spend quite a bit on watches as well, you know. I really like timepieces. And clothing.
You know,
you said not sneakers.
You know somebody buys watches when it's called a timepiece and not just a watch. Oh boy.
So I don't have like a great, I'm still collecting. I'm just a beginner, you know, in that space. But yeah, I've got a few that I think, you know, I've spent way too much on. And mostly it's like, you know, clothing for me.
Yeah. What is your worst money decision so far, you think?
Let me think. I think early days of my life when I bought a car and I just started working, and I think it was great because it was, you know, I think great motivation, but sort of bought a car that I necessarily didn't need at the time, you know. So I would say that was not such a great move for me at the time. Yeah.
Well, certainly was a huge learning curve nonetheless. And look what has happened now. You've now stepped into a totally different space completely, and you've done so using Batu, of course. Well done on this journey. I know for you, it feels like it's only just begun because of what else you want to achieve. But a huge congratulations on our part, and really hope that it continues to grow, and that your journey is a whole lot more bright, even from here on. Theo Baloyi joining us on Other People's Money this evening here on The Money Show. It's been an absolute pleasure joining and having this conversation with you.